Tabletops will start after the following messages.
What if music was magic? Against the Gloom is a fantasy TTRPG about punk pirate troubadours fighting back against a bleak world, one gig at a time. From Scripted Games, the studio that brought you Psychic Trash Detectives, comes a new game by Dustin Patrick Winter. Against the Gloom is about harnessing the power of music, finding chosen family, and building community in the face of the void. Find it now on Kickstarter. Rock on.
Hi y'all, it's Franco. Earlier this year, legendary game designer and trans activist Janelle Jacques passed away. A group of independent RPG creators banded together to create a mega dungeon as a fundraiser, honoring her contributions to TTRPGs. Proceeds from the fundraiser will help her family cover medical expenses, and retail sales will benefit Trans Lifeline. Return to Paranthos is a mega dungeon with over 80 levels written by volunteer RPG creators, including myself. It will include a setting written by Luke Gearing and a previously unpublished Q&A with Janelle. You can back it on Crowdfunder now to get a copy of the book and or the PDF. Info on how to contribute in other ways, such as art and editing, is also available on the Crowdfunder site. The site is crowdfunder.com/Paranthos, P-E-R-I-N-T-H-O-S, and Crowdfunder is spelled without the E. The link is also available in our Instagram story and on our Discord. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to your bonus episode of Tabletop. It's Tabletop's birthday this week, and we are coming back with the rest of your questions from the mailbag. Now, it is I.
Asterisk.
Yeah, I. Asterisk. No, I'm your host, Nick, not asterisk. Who are you across the table?
I'm Rio, comma.
And you, what about you?
Franco, semicolon.
Great. And Shade is.
Semicolon's really good.
And Shade is still in prison. That's more, that's a period, really. Or maybe parentheses.
It's a sentence, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Shade is in prison.
It's a sentence. That's real. That is an A plus. That's a A plus joke.
Oh, man. That was good.
All right, here we go. We're going to really blow through the first four of these because
Seems rude.
No. They're just good, but they're also, we can be a little more concise with our thoughts.
I guess.
So here we go. Mercy Thayer is our first question asker.
Terrifying.
And it is what non TTRPG.
First of all, sue this person. Intellectual copyright.
No, dude, it's really Mercy Thayer.
Yeah, it is the time witch that we have in all of our games. What non TTRPG content has been inspiring your TTRPG world building and storytelling lately, whether it be as a player or game runner? Books, TV, movies, historical events, anything. What has been bleeding into your imaginary worlds?
Oh, I've got a really good answer for this.
All right, hit us.
So I've been really into sort of conservation, climate change stuff.
Yeah.
As well as just like getting back into like my old hyperfixation.
Hyperfixation?
Yeah. I said that, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay.
You did it.
Cool. I just doubted myself for a minute. Thanks for being there for me, guys.
Yeah, of course.
Biology and zoology. Mm. So I've been really focusing my world building around what sort of like magical technologies would exist in sort of a, like a solar punk vibe. Like what? How would the world be if it was like a lower population, a lot of like more not complex but very detailed like food chains, ecosystems. So I've been really interested in like the ecological and sort of civilization nature hybrid stuff as in the real world that I've been trying to copy into my campaign building.
That's great. What about you, Franco?
Could you go first instead?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this science fact that, or not fact, it's sort of like a theory.
A rock fact?
It's a rock fact. But there's this theory out there that it really, so I had a friend pass away like a year ago in July. And when that happened, I was obviously very sad. And then Moya McTeer, who was actually on the podcast a while ago, I went to a book event with her and was kind of talking to her. And there's a theory of time in that time is not linear. It is not. It is just the way our brain processes events and like chemical reactions. But there's a theory that all of it is happening all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So basically everything is happening right
now. That's what ghosts
are. Exactly. This is what I'm saying. But that's been really influencing a lot of my like world building and stuff. It's how I sort of have been thinking about universe building and also like sort of how afterlife or death works and also how ghosts and other monsters and stuff work as well. I just really love the idea that it's all happening at once. It's just how? Our ability to process it.
How is it all? No.
Because we're traveling through the fourth dimension, so we can't perceive it as if though we were in the fifth dimension, so we can't perceive it all at the same time.
Yeah.
At the same time. It's a bad word.
So that's I don't like it.
So for me, it brings like a lot of comfort when like my friend passed away. I was like, oh, I am still with the moments I'm with my friends. They're all happening right now. I'm just not in a moment where I can perceive them.
Yeah.
And that brought me a lot of comfort. And then I started building worlds where I was like, yeah, this is how it works.
Yeah, it's sort of a consequence of how our brains are built that we can't perceive it that way. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah. What about you, Franco?
I don't know, dude. I'm like completely lost. I mean,
Franco only works out of published materials. He doesn't bring anything.
No. I bring things in. I guess this kind of works, but it's still TTRPG stuff, unfortunately. But anyway, I am working on an open table campaign. So I just want to do like a big map setting. And I'm going to use Dolmen Wood, which I backed on Kickstarter. So that's coming out. And it's just like a big hex map. And then I also have a bunch of other adventures that I had picked up. So I'm just like dropping them in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that has been kind of inspire me is like all of these other adventures and stuff that I've been reading, like Nightwick Abbey, which is a terrifying dungeon, mega dungeon.
You told me about it. I was like, oh my God.
It looks absolutely terrifying and I really want to run it.
Well, this is actually a great segue into our next question by Nathan. He says,
hey. We already had a Nathan.
This is a new Nathan.
This is Nathan 2.
Nathan 2. Nathan H.
It's not the same Nathan, though.
Different Nathan, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Two Nathans. pretty good.
He says, have you ever run a game in another game setting? For example, a Monster of the Week game in Forgotten Realms. So this is kind of what you were just saying, where you were like taking things from all these modules you've been reading and then trying to put them in your world.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. So my home campaign currently is set in like an ancient Greek analog world. I call the setting Argot, but it's just named after one of the city states, so it's not really Argot technically. Right. But it's like a city state. It's kind of based on Athens, and my players now are in a new campaign that is set in the past of that world.
Mm.
And I have used a couple of settings from like sort of more. To be fair, I think most of them are actually system agnostic. But I ran them through Kidnap the Archpriest by Skirples, which is a fantastic module if you ever want to do a heist.
Yeah, I was so frustrated.
yeah. That was a different run through. I don't know how to help you with that. We can maybe try again. Maybe I did something. I can do something different. And then we did Barkeep on the Borderlands, which is another system agnostic game.
But kind of set in Greyhawk.
It is actually, it's kind of set in Greyhawk. I had to change King to Duke to make it fit in my world. I guess you're right. I forgot about the adaptation part. Yeah, so the priest in Kidnap the Archpriest had to be slightly different. Like, mm-hmm. It had to be like a different priest that fit in my world and the religions I had set up. And then another thing I actually used was the Merkurger, the Deathrolled Kingdom from Thousand Thousand Islands, which is great. It's hard to get now because the partnership dissolved that created it.
Yeah.
But there's if you can find it, it's a fantastic set of books. Reach of the Roach God is the last thing that they did together.
Mm-hmm.
It's 300 pages. It is beautiful and it might be available somewhere. But anyway, that is sort of set in a Southeast Asia kind of analog.
Hmm.
But it is basically a city that is run by crocodiles, like talking crocodiles and stuff. And it's absolutely terrifying. And I had my players go in there. But it was, again, like it's like an ancient Greek setting. And so I'm like, yeah, this is a microclimate. Yeah. Like, I just wanted to run it because it's so cool.
Yeah.
And then there was one of my player characters is a vampire. And so she like to become a citizen of the Deathworld Kingdom, you must be drowned, held underwater by a crocodile until close to death. And then they decide whether you become a citizen or not, basically. Mm-hmm. And so she did that, but since she didn't have to breathe, she technically passed and became a citizen.
Nice. We love a technicality.
Yeah, it was definitely a technicality. But that is completely system agnostic.
Yeah.
But the setting is very specifically Thousand Islands.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway, that's my answer.
Yeah. What about Bye. You, Leo? Anything?
Give me the question again. Just one more time.
Have you ever set like something from one setting, like Monster of the Week?
You did Curse of Strahd. You did Barovia.
Yeah, Barovia, which is technically a Koronor specific.
I did a Koronor kind of specific in Barovia.
Yeah.
But I was really, I felt like I really just used Barovia.
Mm. Yeah, because it is a demiplane, so you can just hop into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but Koronor has lots of rift systems anyway that, you know, cross connection into a different.
Yeah. You kind of set it up to do that.
I set it up, yeah. But what I've been doing lately, because I haven't run it yet, but I've been really working on it and excited about it. But I've been taking some Monster of the Week bylines, running it through the Monster Hunter franchise, which, you know, is a game where you collect weapons and gear from defeated monsters. And I'm trying to put that into my current campaign building.
Cool. Yeah.
Because, like I said, I had those rifts, which if you're familiar with the podcast and me talking about my setting, rifts are sort of like temporal reality bins, where two planes sort of like twist up and sort of a knot, and things that get too close to that get transformed and mutated. Mm. And these are monstrosities that generally like fuck up the local ecology, so people have to deal with them.
Yeah.
And so I'm really working on a sort of a Monster of the Week Monster Hunter, where it's like you have to find this monster, figure out what it's doing, what it wants, so you can track it, trap it, fight it, and then take from it things to like make potions and armor and stuff with.
Yeah.
Which is also like a lot of Witcher mechanics from the Witcher video games.
Yeah.
So I'm really just trying to work and draw from so many sources to make a survival big monster, save your village, low pop, high threat.
Cool. Yeah, I've never done this with TTRPG settings. I mostly do it with like other media, like books and other things like that. So
I guess actually what I'm doing it in a reverse order. I'm trying to take D&D and shoehorn it into Monster of the Week, where instead of having classes that are very complicated, I'm trying to have classes with moves and just like a lower crunch D&D system.
Mm. I got something for you guys. What is your highest crunch game that you love? Like the most complicated TTRPG that you really love?
5e.
I guess it's 5e.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess 5e. This is an anonymous question that came
I guess
in.
Pathfinder I have played and I have thought it was...
But you hated it, yeah.
I think I didn't like the game. I think I didn't like the campaigns that I was in. I could see Pathfinder being fun.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how people run it. Mm-hmm. I think you get into a problem when, like, a lot of skill stuff I don't really like. I've read through Mothership. I think it's too crunchy for me.
Yeah.
It's just too many dice.
Yeah.
It's just like it's a D100 system.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's happening. But otherwise, it's very cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's high crunch, actually, but I just remember reading it and not understanding what the hell was happening.
Yeah.
But Pathfinder, very crunchy. Thought it was fine. 5e. Yeah. Better, I think.
For me, I think it's 40K in that there are Crusade books that you can play like kind of stories with a friend where you continuously your armies will like meet during this crusade and like it changes how your army functions and like you get gear and stuff based on it and it tells a story throughout the whole thing. So that's probably the one that I would say because it is incredibly crunchy to the point where like I hate the fact that I have to engage with it in this way.
any of those miniatures games are way too crunchy.
Yeah.
You have like rulers and things.
I find them to be a better version of what 5e does for me, which is like interesting combat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because I think there's a – in 5e, there's like a level of crunch that is a little too fuzzy sometimes too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, maybe I'd rather play a skirmish game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I would be fine playing. I would love to play a skirmish game. I've
heard Warcry is really good. Mm. Yeah, it's like fantasy.
Warcrime?
Warcry. Like, oh. Yeah. Oh,
so why is there a game called War Crimes? What do you do?
I played this one game. I think it's like a Gloomhaven, like,
oh, Gloomhaven's
mini
a good
game
answer too.
Type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Like, is Call of the Lion?
Like Lion and
Call
something.
Of the Lion, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I played that one night. It was pretty fun.
It's fun, but
it's
yeah.
Like, it's just like a little tactical thing. It's like yeah. Card driven and stuff. And it's like, yeah, this is cool.
Yeah. All right. Sean asks, what are some good ideas, tips/tricks to running a good underwater adventure session for a normally land-based adventuring party?
This is a great question. Oh my God, I wish I knew.
Yeah,
I've done it one time, and basically what I did was air pockets from shipwreck to shipwreck so that the players would have to go they would only have to get to the next shipwreck, and there were like sharks and things yeah. in the water that they'd have to avoid.
It's but like Black Flag.
Yeah, but at each shipwreck,
it's the worst part of the game. It's so scary.
My Knits, I think they're called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they had gone down with these ships and had made like little air pockets because the plants produce oxygen and just created like this huge bubble.
Yeah,
sick. I didn't really explain the science. I just figured that was enough.
No, it makes sense to me.
No, yeah, yeah.
That's so fine. Yeah, so that's how I did underwater by creating like little air lands for people.
Yeah,
to
I've never been able to figure out. Like, I would love to run sort of a pirate game or something. I've never been able to figure it out because it just feels like you're so isolated for most of the time. It's sort of like space where. 90% of the time somebody's in space, you're not going to see or hear or touch anything
because it's just
vastly empty.
And there's also like a weird thing with me is I have a hard time dealing with depth as a concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Like where is this taking place in regard – because like my feet are usually firmly on the ground and I deal with a one plane of existence.
Yeah.
If you're doing an underwater game, like pure underwater, you've got to account for the fathoms and up and
– and the pressure and all
that. Ooh, yeah, the pressure. Yeah. Hey. Actually, is it specifically underwater or is it?
Let's take a look.
Like water.
Underwater adventure session.
Yeah, no, I've never done that. But yeah. I have like the game that you guys played with me, the 13 Islands. That is, that was like a kind of a 13 Islands in a sea, and you're like kind of like a pirate type of thing.
I'm having a thought. You guys remember? Were any of you in that game that I did? Oh fuck! I was an underwater something head. Huh. You all played. You played like a seal, and you guys were fighting like. You remember the big shark folk?
Yeah, it was like a selkie or something.
Yeah, you were like a selkie.
I don't remember this at all.
Sure, it was a candy fungin.
It was a candy fungin. It was a one shot.
Hmm. I don't remember.
I've done it. I don't remember what I did.
I was gonna say
I have like a very. Picture of the map I used and like tokens, and I can visualize the Roll20 board, but how I set that up, I don't know.
Underwater you
could,
game,
you could also do like JK Rowling as a turf, but she kind of came up with an interesting idea.
Oh, the gillyweed?
Yeah, where it's like basically you just take a big timer and you say you can function underwater in this way.
Of course.
Click, but it runs out when this sand timer
is
done.
When this physical timer runs out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be fun.
Give them the means to. Because like one of the things that I hate about the ocean is how ill-suited my body is for it, both in mobility and longevity. So you really have to take care of those two things, and you can have a fun underwater.
That makes me think of Shadow Dark, which has real-time torch timers. Like you, like basically, like right, you need like a torch to get through a dungeon,
mm-hmm.
But you like the torches last a real world 1 hour.
Yeah.
It's novel. It's interesting. That makes me think of that, like a gillyweed.
Yeah,
gillyweed was made by Ursula K. Le Guin. I think
she
wrote that first. Yeah, cool. She invented that.
That's amazing. Yeah, because fuck turfs. Anyway, here we go. Jackie asks, Jackie, let me just first say, I'm sorry that Shade is in prison. It must, like...
It's hard for the wives.
Yeah, we're here for you. if you could run a D&D campaign for any three people throughout human history,
what?
Whether alive or dead,
Napoleon one.
Who would they be?
Easy Napoleon, easy.
You would do a Napoleon.
Oh, Napoleon,
he'd be the worst to play with.
Yeah, he would be such a prick. But he'd be good at pushing the little minis around.
And this is a campaign. This could be...
Oh, a campaign?
This could be a long time. This could be a whole year, multiple years of your life.
He'd be really bad at it, too, at some point. Yeah. He'd be like, oh, yeah, let's go to you know, fantasy Russia and just walk into the fucking... Like
Buster Keaton would be in mine. I don't know how or why. It just feels right.
Yeah, I might want to get, like, actors or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about another? It could be fun too. Like, if I'm not a GM, having like Tolkien or someone like a world builder be the
Tolkien
GM.
Though.
Maybe not him.
But. Tolkien seems like he'd be like a like. I really enjoyed Box the text. Rings when I was young, but he would be such a like. I don't want to say bore. I don't disrespect the man, but I don't think I would enjoy.
Jackie has said that hers would be Edward Gorey, Hieronymus Bosch, and Noel Fielding.
Okay. I have a great answer.
Uh-huh.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
Mm, good.
Jules Verne.
Mm.
Isaac Asimov.
Ooh.
Okay.
That's my set.
So Shade had an answer here too. I'd enjoy playing with Octavia Butler, Alex Horn, and Susanna Clarke, as they all have creative minds and have made things I enjoy. I actually don't know who two of those people are. So.
I don't like that book that she wrote, Susanna Clarke.
Oh,
so I don't
know.
What's that really long one or whatever? Jonathan Strange and
I've tried that book twice and I've gone halfway through both times and then stopped. God. Yeah, I can't.
Oh, do a third try, but start in the middle.
That's a good try. That's a good idea. But I always forget what happens in the beginning. A problem.
Take better notes here. Does anyone else take notes while they're reading a book? Is that something that people do?
That sounds
I
cool.
I do it.
I like that.
I know that people highlight books. Like, I like this passage kind of thing. No, you just looked at me like you were about to throttle me. Your nose twitched in a weird way. Ugh. Anyway, Franco, do you have your three?
No, I do not. Let me think.
Really keep tough. Napoleon. Napoleon's a good, interesting.
I guess Napoleon
answer.
Could be in there. Oscar Wilde would be pretty cool.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's a great one. He would be so uninterested in D&D.
You're so right. He would be so fucking done.
Yeah, I'll put him in mine too. Buster Keaton and Oscar Wilde as for two for me as well.
They both listed living people as well though. Yeah. Noel Fielding and Alex Horn.
Tesla.
Is that
that's mine?
Ooh,
he's
Tesla's cool.
Such a fucking weirdo. I love it.
Yeah, I thought about putting Tesla in, but I was like, I'm gonna keep the theme of authors.
Mm. I think Tesla just because if you look at just his like day to day interpersonal life, he seems like. Such a different set of ideas that I would like to have influence a campaign.
You know, he invented Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
If he just wasn't driven to suicide by a certain someone.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Looking at you, Edison.
Also, apparently he really loved pigeons. I'm into it.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's nice. Everyone
so you have one more.
Oh, boy.
Let's just throw things at him. Hunter S. Thompson. Hemingway.
Stop. Jane Austen.
Jane Austen. That would be a good one. Solid social dynamics.
That'd
like
be good.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next is from...
Actually, I would play in a game that Jane Austen ran. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be
that
fun.
Would be really good.
So this is obviously done to hurt me. This is from Reggie, the imaginary clown monster that have a little bit of myself that is truly scared of. But Reggie says...
Why did you say imaginary? What do you mean...
I hate you guys. I would love to know what the gang's favorite obscure or underutilized monsters are. Are there any cool homebrewed enemies or pre-made that you all have encountered or not?
Underused monsters.
I want to mention the thing that I'm currently working on that I got from a YouTube channel called Monster Garden that I was talking to these guys about. The Witch Hunter. It is a thing. It's a YouTube channel called Monster Garden, and he came up with this idea of like a witch hunter that is like made weirder by getting like you know fighting witches or whatever and like hunting them down or whatever. But the witches like curse them, and so like they'll get more and more cursed and weird as time goes on. I think that would be a really cool NPC or PC background, which is the thing that I'm working on is like a PC background for a witch hunter.
Yeah. Shade says, this note was just passed to me. When's the last time you ever ran into a Sphinx in a game? I like Sphinxes. and would love to encounter them more.
Gotta come up with a lot of riddles.
I know.
That's the one reason why I don't use sphinxes.
It's because of the riddle?
I don't want to deal with
the riddles. What if the riddle is just, like, I'm going to fucking eat you. Figure out how to not make me eat you.
there's the Monster Overload, the Monster Overhaul by Skirples, which has a sphinx in it. I don't know if there's a table for riddles, which that would be really helpful. If there's not,
really look up riddles.
Yeah, if there's like a table for riddles with that book, go pick it up. It's a great book.
For me, it's a hive mind. I just haven't, like, my favorite thing is a undead setting or undead monster setting where there's a hive mind. So it's like a lich that's controlling a vast, like your deathless one. Like that sort of stuff just like really jives with me.
Can
like,
I throw something at you?
Yeah.
Just put this in your back pocket.
Okay.
In your mind. I was reading a series called Seven to Eternity.
Okay.
And there is a character in that who, if he asked you for something and you agree to it, he'll be like, oh, can you hand me that? And you hand him that thing, that item. Mm-hmm. He can then see and hear through your eyes and ears whenever he wants to.
Whoa.
So he went through like years of just asking people for very simple things until now he has all this power because, you know, he knows everything because he can see and hear every.
What's this from?
It's called Seven to Eternity. It was a graphic novel trade series.
Yeah.
And he became the king of whispers, and it was like
a spy master.
Because eventually he had enough power; he could offer people things like, "What do you want?" And he would be like, "Yeah, I'll give it to you."
Yeah.
But you know what? I take. I become a spy in your house, and you can't ever stop that.
Whoa!
So it was like these people who had like just left society to get away from him, and like this whole thing. That's a hive mind ish, but it was a different take on it.
I always love sort of like the master of intrigue sort of thing as well. I'm just not very good at running that stuff. And also, the thing that I really want as a player when I fight undead is like the complete lack of guilt in, or like the lack of complexity in that combat. It's like this is something that is not alive. It is not sentient. It is sort of controlled by this it's sort of like fighting a mannequin, you know what I mean? And in a way, I'm sort of like, this frees me from any sort of, you know.
Oh, there is that.
Yeah, it's sort of nice. You know, it really expands the question of like, why do we want that? Is that something that is sort of a remnant of our sort of colonialist, you know, culture?
Yeah, totally.
Because like we all, you know, the entire planet, like there's almost no places that are untouched by colonialism. So it's kind of like, why do we think this is fun? Like, what is it about it? And it's like, I think it's an interesting question. I don't think it makes you a bad person to like just be like, I want to kill undead without any repercussion. And I think that's the best one. Like goblins, it's kind of like, we're going to kill a bunch of goblins. Like, what did that goblin do to you, asshole?
Yeah, no, it's very similar.
That question in a thing that I've been
which doing. You should answer. You know, you should be like, this is what that goblin did to you, and that's why you want to fight him.
And also a thing that I read recently, or I listened to a video essay recently, which I really liked about how when you have a war game that is based around constant conflict forever and always, where all the factions are always fighting even amongst themselves, like what you have to do is make all of them bad because otherwise it cannot sustain itself. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at basically any sci-fi series in which that is part of the function of it, like Gundam or something, like all the factions are bad. Like everyone is
bad.
Or
The Witcher.
Yeah, or The Witcher. Oh, like everyone sucks.
The Witcher's the worst. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, everybody's bad.
Because otherwise, like you can't interact within it in a way of like with the moral sort of... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an interesting concept. I recommend it's Arbitrator Ian, I think, did it. It was a really good video essay about specifically 40K, but everywhere in war games specifically. But one thing that I was going to say is like, to me, even fighting a hive mind of like Zerg or like the Tyranids or something in 40K, where it's just this creature that...
Isn't Zerg StarCraft?
Yep, but they're very similar. They basically were like StarCraft copied Warhammer's whole aesthetic, and then Warhammer was like, fine, we can't sue you because we called these things Space Marines, but we're going to take Zerg and turn it into Tyranids. So it was like a whole back and forth between them.
It's like the DC Marvel trade-off.
Exactly, where they just stole each other's superheroes. Yeah. But Tyranids are just like, they just eat. they just eat everything.
Scrummy.
They're basically locusts. And
yum, yum.
Yeah, and so like fighting back against that, it doesn't feel morally icky to me because it's also like, it's just sort of life and death. It's survival. Yeah. This thing is not in, like sentient in any real way to try to devour us, but we can't let it devour us. You know what I mean? There's not like a moral thing there. And so I kind of like that kind of stuff because I'm interested in complex narratives, but I don't always love to be like, I am, you know, with the goblin thing, like those are sentient beings and killing them feel really bad when it's like they are forced to live on the outskirts of society and stuff.
I think something interesting about this too is like, if you think of undead as not as like creatures or whatever, but as like sort of like, what are you trying to do in this space, like in the world? It's like, what does the undead represent? Well, the undead represents like this, you know, something's gone wrong here, or something like that.
Like natural order.
Or like a locust plague of like tyranids or whatever. Like that happens because of like this, like something's gone wrong. You know, I think it's interesting to use the monsters as, you know, like upsetting a balance or like a metaphor or like something where it's like, something's gone wrong. You know, it's like the Tolkien thing, like the critics and the monsters, where he talks about how people really don't talk very much about Grendel as a key part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, they were just back in the day, they would mostly just focus on like the linguistics of it and stuff like that. And just like that, it's an interesting story. But like the monster doesn't mean anything. It's like the monster means a lot. Grendel's mother and Grendel, like they represent something, and they represented something in that culture. And I think when you think of monsters that way, there's a really good supplement from Luke Gehring's Wolves Upon the Coast, which is this huge like hex map, sort of like a Viking Age style type of thing. And there are these two additional supplements called Monsters and Treasures. But anyway, the monster manual, it's just like kind of a rewrite of the OD&D monster manual, but all of the monsters like are described in kind of like a more poetical way. And it's sort of like, some of them, like a dragon is like a creature that like hoards money.
Yeah.
And then at the end of a bunch of the entries too, is like, I forgot exactly how he phrases it, but it's like, this is one of the ways that man can become like immortal or something like that.
Right.
Or like man can like remove himself from the world.
Yeah.
So like a lot of these monsters are actually just like humans that, you know, accumulated a bunch of wealth and now you're a dragon or like, you know, it's like these sort of like,
the monster is the metaphor. Yeah.
Like
they kind of flaunt their societal duties to instead pursue personal something.
Yeah.
And like a dragon's a good example of that. And I think that there's like, you know, they're like ogres that are specifically like flesh eaters or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're just like consume things. It's like gluttony, like the consuming, the overconsumption and the not sharing of resources in that way. It is a lot of like anti versus pro community stuff, which is interesting.
Or like the ghouls. Yeah,
good way to think of monsters.
Yeah.
Or like ghouls in The Witcher.
Yeah.
Ghouls only come up after like a bunch of people have died. And like in The Witcher, when you're playing it, like the ghouls are everywhere that a battle has just taken place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also like specifically with ghouls in The Witcher, I think it's also like where the funeral rites, like where people are not also taken care of after death. Like the respect isn't shown. And that's also like in a society, it's important
folk to vampire stuff too.
Yeah, it's like it's important to bury your dead because you don't spread disease and all that kind of stuff as well. So there's like some interesting stuff there. But Rio, we actually haven't gotten to your monster yet. So Rio, what's your monster?
I was gonna say like I guess like a good underused monster that I would like to do, but don't get a chance to do, are a lot of like as we were just talking about this in the last question too, it's the underwater monsters.
Oh yeah, like Kraken and stuff?
Oh, not even Kraken, but like, you know, just, you know, sharks, deep sea.
Coelacanth.
what is it, a Sahgrin?
I love Sahgrin.
But it's like
A giant crab.
It's pronounced Fahugagats.
Okay.
But it's everybody like, it's so to the limit.
To put an adventure in an underwater setting without having like a whole like thing focused on it, so you don't really get to use them unless they like come to the coast.
I also really do like deep sea stuff, like in Candle Cove. I made the angler folk kind of thing because I just think angler fish are so fucking scary.
The beach, and another thing I've been doing, and it's not underused. I get you because we were talking about goblins and a couple of the other like tangents, but I'm really trying to take monsters that have been used a lot and rework them into like a different sort of take, because I think a lot of like the back chatter in the community is like, oh, why do you just kill goblins? Why do you just kill orcs?
Yeah,
it's like, well, they're evil. Oh, they're evil, and you get that whole society thing. It's like, well, and again, like, yeah, take the sentience away from them, and I'm making goblins that are more of not a humanoid, but a mustelid, like, you know, weasels, ferrets, otters, and like there's just this invasive species that's destroying everything, but it's intelligent enough to like go after children and to like just break stores of food, and it's like they're a huge problem.
Yeah,
so that's why you have to hunt them. And
yeah, because you just in general approach monsters from like a biological ecosystem.
Yeah,
so like yours are always tend to be like already in the balance, like Franco, you were saying, like you kind of approach it in a very interesting way. Like I don't usually have a lot of guilt when fighting the monsters in your world, because a lot of the monsters in your world are like, this bird is huge and has teeth and it is carnivorous. So like,
it's coming at
exactly. Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah, that's just, you know.
I mean, you did make those guys with the helmets that were.
Oh, the Capiarum?
Yeah, those like guys who were just like chill guys, but then they have like these helmets on them and now it's like, oh, now I'm a monster.
They got a demon like, stuffed into them,
Oh yeah, because their souls were not in their bodies. You were just fighting the demons, but the shells, like if you killed the shells, the soul couldn't come back. So it's like, you weren't really killing anyone, but you were not helping.
Not helping. Yeah, it felt pretty bad. Yeah, that was a rough one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad one. And then of course I had Babylon, who just kept trying to get Garth to put on a helmet.
Yeah.
And it was like, I felt weird after a little while, but I was like, I guess feeling weird when you're an evil person's doing evil things is like good. You're like, oh, this is a good evil character. It's like he's really making everyone uncomfortable with his evil antics.
Totally. And we're talking about the last few questions after this break.
How do you fix a quandary? There's only one solution. Portal Quandary is a Dungeons & Dragons real play comedy, dramedy podcast about a party of mismatched heroes trying to do just that. Join Dungeon Master Tyrone Cross as he hurls our Melbourne-based party into a mystical world full of strange creatures, stranger people, and strangest of all, unanticipated self-discovery. Gross. Listen to Portal Quandary now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Episodes released tri-weekly.
Are you looking for an actual play podcast with young, hot role players, disciplined professional voice actors, and wholesome content? Well, this isn't that podcast. AARPG is an adults-only podcast with interviews, actual play stories where...
Excuse me, Matt, why do you sound like you've been chain-smoking since you're a toddler?
What do you mean?
The voice. You don't have to do that voice, man.
I don't?
Nah, just tell them that we're a group of old friends who like to get together, hang out, play lots of different types of games, and we want them to feel like they're sitting at the table with us. And they can find us just by searching for the AARPG podcast on their favorite podcatcher and at the AARPGs on YouTube.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today. Welcome back, everyone. We're answering your questions on this bonus episode on the week of our birth, Tabletops. Second anniversary. Here we go. So this is our friend at Roleplay Chat. It's another great podcast, very similar to ours. This is Matt's question. He says, I'm of the opinion that everyone at the table is responsible for their own fun while playing TTRPGs, while also being kind and respectful to the others. I'm curious to know two things. One, do you agree with that statement? Why or why not? Two, what are the things that you do as a game master or player, if that's your preferred role, to ensure you are having fun? This is a really great question, I think.
Yeah. I have a lot of...
Yeah, Franco says all the time, like, you responsible for you, baby.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with those statements. I think you are responsible for those. I do understand that it is difficult to think that way sometimes, though. I do acknowledge that, and I do my condolences for people that think that way. Because it's difficult. It's a difficult, like, it's like a psychological thing, right? Like, I have problems with that, too. Just in like general life, but
of deciding to like advocate for your own fun?
No, like of making sure people like what you're doing, you know.
Yeah.
Is them not having fun a reflection on me as a person, as a game master and stuff. And it's like that's a really bad avenue to go down. And you know, that's what
I've been dealing with a lot of, I guess I would call it rejection sensitivity, because the campaign that we're currently running in my Esper's game has been really hard to judge people's
engagement,
buy-in, engagement, enjoyment. And like the feedback is nice, but like the games just feel like a little hollow.
Yeah.
And it's like because, you know, I shot high.
Yeah.
I tried to do a really complicated
thing. It's very complicated, yeah.
And I think we're coming out of it, and we're going forward. It was a good learning experience. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah, you are kind of like, as the game master, responsible if other people are having fun.
Yeah.
And so I think what I've been trying to do is give everyone moments to shine, 15-minute, like, hey, what does your character want? What are you trying to do? And sort of like – and then also like listen when the player's like, oh, I want to do this, and not be like, oh, I didn't plan for that. Be like – because, you know, like, we had a character in that game who there was like an offshoot of a character that gave a bag away, and he became really interested in chasing that bag down. It was like, oh, okay, I can add stuff into the game because that character has said that this would be fun for them. He's left the campaign since then.
It's me.
So he wasn't – I guess he wasn't having any fun. You can't win them all, I guess, is what I would say to you, Matt.
Here's what I would have to say. I am going to be a contrarian here and disagree with both of you. I think that because it is a collaborative form and most of the things you do within D&D or TTRPGs requires the collaboration of your peers, that it is responsible – everyone has to be responsible for allowing everybody to have fun. So like if someone is interested in a specific thing, but that requires some buy-in from the rest of the group, the rest of the group kind of has to also do that. You know what I mean? And or at least the GM has to figure out a way to allow for like a splitting of the party so that different people can kind of go after different things.
I think that person would also have a responsibility to the rest of the people.
Absolutely.
At the table,
yeah, no.
And so that sounds like you're agreeing.
No. I'm saying that because you guys were saying it's everyone's responsibility to have their own
fun.
Enjoyment. Yeah, right.
No, I agree. I think the second part of it, though, said something about like kindness and
totally. Yeah, like while
and
still
that's just what you're.
I think that's what you're saying is like you should also be considerate of the others and making sure that you're giving them space to have their own fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's like true for like any situation. Yeah, you have to look after your own self. Mm-hmm. You know, your needs, but you also can't ignore other people's needs.
I think the thing that I am sort of railing against, I think that's a really strong term, I'm sort of like saying is like it's not your responsibility. Like don't put it on yourself. Like don't put that evil on yourself of like thinking that, you know, you're in charge of everybody else's happiness. Like that type of thing.
That's just stressful.
That's like the kind of poisonous thing that you could fall into when you don't kind of see the difference between like, you know, there's a difference between like, I'm responsible for everybody's fun and I want to make space for other people to have fun. And I want to try to engage and, you know, have fun myself.
It's also, sorry, Rio, I just want to say that, like, I think it's also hard when people interact with these games for different things. Like people want different things out of these games. So someone could be like very tactically oriented and like the tactics or strategy or breaking of riddles is like their favorite part of a game. Whereas another person wants nothing more than to talk to like all the NPCs. You know what I mean? Like there's like a lot of different things that people might really like. Some people just like combat. And so it's really hard to balance all of those things if you're trying to balance it for everybody. I think that a GM's responsibility is just to kind of get a read on like what people like to do and make sure that the session has like a little bit of everything so that everyone can enjoy it.
But I'll pull you back on that one is I think not every session should have something for everyone.
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm using our group as an example because there are seven people.
Yeah, so big.
You're not – if you try to
seven
hit –
seven players and one referee.
Yeah, if you try to hit on everyone's engagement on every session, you're not really going to be doing anything meaningful, I don't think.
Yeah.
So but you also – as a player, you have to be like, okay, this game might not be me heavy, but the next game – like every other game should hit everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah – as a player, don't expect every game to have like you a big core moment for you. And again, you aren't responsible for other people's happiness, but be open to when they say they want something. Don't try to, you know.
Yeah. As a game master, like you definitely want to run your own thing. Mm-hmm. And I think being clear about what that thing is and like what type of game it is that you're going to run and that you want to make for people so that they understand what they're getting themselves into is good, and you should also have openness to how other people might want to have fun in that environment. It's like right. It's like a back and forth.
Yeah, you know? Going back to don't write a story.
Yeah,
you can't
exactly,
control it.
And here's the thing, though, is that like I think that maybe we were saying different things too, where you were saying don't write something for every person, and I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I think that have a little bit of all of the different mechanics that people enjoy in every game. You know what I mean? So you have a diversity of what you're doing, whether that is just like taking something that you're doing, like you're talking to a king, but like maybe there's someone gambling in the back of the hall that someone else could like go and like maybe they're wanting to gather information while everyone's talking to the king or something. Like there's like different stuff that you can kind of put in so that people can interact with a situation in different mechanic ways that they might enjoy. But I do agree, don't be like, okay, so especially for our group, which is so huge, it's like don't think like, oh, you know, Jackie really loves, you know, talking
but
to weird
go back
characters.
To an earlier point, that is also like the player's responsibility if there's a scene going on where they don't have a lot to do to find something to interact with in that way. Like you, the DM, shouldn't be like, oh, I'll put a gambling thing in the back for the people. Like, no, have the players go, oh, I want to start a gambling ring in the back because I'm not going to be involved in this conversation.
Sure, yeah.
In which case, goes back to the players are responsible for having their own fun.
Yeah.
Tell the DM what you're going to do and as a DM, make room for them to do that.
Yeah,
but as a DM, don't try to plan that's taking on too much work for one person to try to figure out things to do in every situation for every single person.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think that I have also run into frustrations, especially with like more open-ended games, like systems, where you can be like in Monster of the Week, for example, there's a basic question where you
my favorite system.
What do you do? Yes, your favorite system, Rio. But where you say like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. I've ran into this multiple times throughout Lakewood or Candle Cove or different one-offs that I've done where people are like, I have no idea. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's really hard as a GM to come up with.
I think
that's
when you give them more information.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that, yes, I agree with like players should like be always offering stuff to the DM of or GM of like what they want to do because that is their responsibility. But I also know that like realistically a lot of players feel like a lot of pressure and like don't like to offer that in the same way. And so I think that what you said, Franco, of just like keep offering and like I guess it's the GM's responsibility to offer enough information until somebody does do that so that they can make a decision that they feel good about. It's just a weird balance. I don't think I've really quite cracked it yet.
Because we go back to the original synopsis, everyone's responsible for their own fun, and everyone needs to be willing to bend to let other people have room.
Totally, yeah.
And it's a constant back and forth that you're not going to solve.
Yeah, it's hard.
You got to just go with the flow.
Cool. All right. We're coming up on our last 7. Grant from Game Master Monday, who is a very good friend of the pod. Thank you for all of these, Grant. You're wonderful. These are
Thanks
lightning
for
round.
Granting us
oh,
your question.
Okay. That's a P. I'll give it a P. Here we go. These are lightning, lightning rounds. All right. One, if you could convert any movie into a TTRPG system or adventure, what would you choose and why?
Speed.
Speed. That's a great one. Yeah. That's built for
speed,
a module.
Done.
Hellboy.
Hellboy, that's also a great one.
Yeah.
For me, Grand Budapest Hotel.
I've love never that. Seen it, but I've been wanting
to. It's one okay. of my. It's my favorite movie, probably.
Okay.
All right. What is your process for picking topics for tabletop? I mean, if people send in topics, we love to talk about those, having a little structure of what people want. But also, a lot of times we just kind of brainstorm stuff that we think we would like to talk about yeah. or specific things that come
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
right?
I'll try to like take. Notes down if like I get like an article from CBR or something on my Google feed. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting thing. Maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah.
I'll add it to like our backlog of lists. But then again, that just comes back to the brainstorming on the day of.
Yeah. I just let them all do it. And then sometimes I'll write a script to embarrass Nick.
Yeah.
But he never reads them.
Again, Franco Franco shows up and he's done when he gets here.
I'm done.
What are the qualities of a great actual play podcast?
None. I've never listened to one. That is good.
I
thought this was lightning speed.
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
I would hour and a half tops.
Yeah, I think
don't make me
brevity.
Watch a 4-hour long episode. Yeah. I can't do it. Not when there's so many that I want to follow and keep up with.
And I also think audio quality, like
audio quality,
yeah, making sure that the production is. Good.
I agree with both of those. I actually have listened to actual plays. I'm just kidding.
Please reveal one deep, dark, honest secret about yourself.
No.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's an answer.
Beholden to you, question asker.
Grant, I have sent you a carrier pigeon that is on its way right now with a secret that you must burn after you read. All right. Fuck, marry, kill. Fantasy settings, space settings, or modern settings?
You asked that question too fast.
All right, we're playing
so fuck, marry,
kill. And the three things are fantasy settings, sci-fi settings, or modern settings?
I guess I'll kill sci-fi settings. I do like them, but the other two...
They're hard.
Modern settings, I will... I'll give them a kiss. And then fantasy settings, I guess I'll have to marry them because what can I do? I'm
yeah.
just a fucking nerd.
I'm going to kill fantasy settings.
You have only ever run fantasy settings for
That's
me.
Why I would kill them.
Do you want to do different things?
I was thinking
that.
About that too.
I've killed one that I've been with the most and open up
wow,
new avenues.
That's dark as hell, dude.
That's a Black Widow.
Hey, this
sort
is
of...
the question that I was asked. I would.
This is your deep dark secret.
I would fuck sci-fi.
Ew.
Because I feel like you could get weird with science fiction.
Oh, okay.
So let's dive into that. And then I would marry modern because you know I'm. It seems nice. I could live a good life, and like you could do a lot of stuff with modern settings that combine fantasy, science fiction,
yeah,
folklore.
True.
Like you could make a life with modern.
Modern's so fun. I would love to run more.
Yeah, modern is my Mary as well because I just love like.
That's why I give it a little kiss.
Yeah, I honestly love slightly in the past. I love 90s, 2000s.
Yeah,
I just really love it. No cell phones.
It's pretty cool.
Space settings, like I said, I just don't know how to do them. So I guess I'll kill them because it just feels like it's so empty out there. And I guess you can like arrive at different places and do
I think the tough thing for me about space settings is just like, okay, you're on a planet. It's like, fuck. A whole planet?
Or like a space station that it's his own. Like ecosystem or whatever, it's like
that's easier.
It's a little easier, but that's still huge. That's like a full
city.
Setting that
you have to plan
stay
a full
in.
City to do a space station.
Yeah, yeah, but like Waterdeep is a city, and we've spent years in Waterdeep.
Yeah, I think.
We've only really gone to our block and
which is how most people live
in the cities,
their lives. Yeah,
I think I think a cool way to run sci-fi, which is like kind of how I am doing it. I guess like space sci-fi. I guess sci-fi could be other stuff.
Yeah.
Sci-fi could be like cyberpunk. But anyway, if you're doing like space sci-fi, I've been running like a, well, I was trying to start a, like an outer space setting. And I think one cool thing to do is just like explore derelict ships and like stuff like that. You're just kind of like dungeon delving, but you're like, fuck, I can't, what if I can't breathe?
Like a salvager.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, yeah. I think like that type of thing can be really fun.
Yeah.
All right. But to get back, Nick, you were fuck, marrying, and killing. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would definitely fuck with fantasy. I don't like living there, you know? Fantasy is too, for me, like I like something I relate to and I relate to modern stuff best. So, all right. Shade, if anyone wants to know, said fuck space, marry fantasy, kill modern. That son of a bitch.
God. Shade is.
He needs to be in the room right
Shade
now.
Shade is such a fantasy pervert.
I know. He fucking loves it.
I guess I also married fantasy, but like the way that he likes fantasy is like.
And I would 100%
loves fantasy.
100% the reason why he said fuck space is Spelljammer, which is also just space fantasy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, his fantasy flavor, I think, I don't know. He can correct me if I'm wrong. I'll call him from prison.
Yeah.
Or in prison. Uh-oh, I'm also in prison. yeah, I think it's because he does really well. I think what I like about Shade running Waterdeep is he knows 5e really well.
Yeah, he's comfortable.
He understands it so well. He knows how to work with every magic effect. Like, I'm just like, I don't want that. I'm going to strip it all down. And like the fantasy that I want is like Tolkien little, like you're a little idiot that's walking around the thing and you find a magic sword. Like now what are you going to do?
The dwarves are mad at you.
Yeah. Like the dwarves are going to get you. Not like, you know, okay, this is like the magical formula for, all right, this glyph is going to, okay, this fucking thing's like, oh fuck. It's like crazy high fantasy, high magic stuff is like not really my bag because it's too complicated for me and I'm dumb.
All right. So. Here is the last of the lightning round questions. It's an important one. Who is the most kissable GM? Brendan Lee Mulligan. I love an anti-capitalist. That's mine. How about you, Rio?
Give me a second. This is an unfair lightning question.
Yeah, I
most
don't
know. Kissable.
No, I'm not going to kiss anybody.
Most kissable DM.
Neither did Shade. He said that he would never kiss and tell. So.
I don't like a lot of physical touch with people that I don't know. So this is like, who would I want to get what to about know just, the most?
Have you seen Muppet's Christmas Carol?
Yeah.
You want a jelly bean? Like, what about that kind of kiss? Like just a kiss on the nose.
No, I don't want
remember when Rizzo did that?
I just gotta give him a handshake.
I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh my God.
The less intimate kiss.
Yeah. You just give him a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All this kissing.
So I'm going to kiss Abria Iyengar.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, that's not my orientation, so it won't
so
be
so it's
as,
platonic by definition.
It's more platonic, like little...
Yeah.
It'll be more of a stage kiss, and like I respect her work.
Again, you can just give her a... This is, I don't want to talk about
it. What if it's like...
This is a terrible
what
question.
If like a,
I feel objectified.
What if it's sort of like a my lord, and you just kiss their hand? You know, it's like a...
Next
a
question.
All right.
I'm glad you're on the same page with me and not wanting to talk about this at all.
So Lucky Leaf Teas, who's just like a really wonderful company that makes tea for different sort of like classes in D&D and like fantasy inspired teas and products. You should definitely go check them out. Asks.
I want the cleric one.
Yeah, the cleric one looks so good. Do you see the wizard one that has all of the like the edible glitter and stuff in it? And there are different schools of magic for the wizard teas.
Okay, that's
are you
fun.
Fucking kidding me? That's amazing. Great product idea. All right. So here we go. And this is a big one, and it's the last one.
Oh.
If we could play one TTRPG system from now until the end of time, what would it be and why?
My hacked version of Karen that I will continue to evolve over time.
You got there a second, and you're like, oh, my homebrew system that can change constantly. You're not locking me into anything for eternity.
Nice try.
I don't even like week-long commitments. Like, I'm not going to commit to anything for life.
For me, Powered by the Apocalypse. I think the 2D6 system is just so...
Yeah, but which game? That's just
the... That's the system.
That's not a system.
Yeah. It
it's
is.
It's a branding term.
Powered by the Apocalypse is a TTRPG system. All of the TTRPGs within that umbrella use the same system. They just use it in different ways.
I guess you could call it. I guess it's a system.
Yeah, I'm gonna cop out of this answer and say that I refuse to be tied to anything for my whole life. Which
I like
is why
how the
I'm
last...
the only single person in this group.
The last question, the last few questions we just kept refusing to answer.
I think it's getting close to lunch. We're getting angry.
Yeah. That's
Yeah, no, I think the Power by the Apocalypse. I just love the sort of like big failure, hard ask, complete success. It's just like a really
I like all the information that's locked behind roles.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Classic.
So that's it. That is our...
That was pretty spicy, sorry. Yeah.
That is our mailbag part two. I hope you enjoyed this celebration of tabletop this week and that gotcha journalism that Franco got me with on Wednesday.
Yeah, got your ass.
And hopefully Shade will be back soon, and we'll see you all next week for tabletop.
Why did you say it like that?
Whoop, whoop. It's the sound
all
of the
right,
police.
Let's do that. All right, let's plan this breakout.